Pillow, Radio Catskill, Local News, Culture, and NPR.
Live from the WJFF studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, the New York budget is late, but county and local elected officials are joining more than 180 organizations to urge Governor Hochul to end $265 million of fossil fuel subsidies in the final budget. We'll hear from Rich Schrader, director of the New York Government Affairs section of the NRDC, the National Resources Defense Council. Scientists are monitoring the spread of bird flu in dairy cattle and other mammals to see how the virus is changing. So far, there's no alarming signs that it poses a new risk to humans. We'll check in with Dr. Jody Galadik, the chief epidemiologist for Garnet Health. And it's Workshift Live with James B. Huntington. And our spring fun drive continues. We're over halfway there and need your support now. 845-482-4141.
Our news in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. Former President Donald Trump has arrived at a courthouse in New York City for the start of his criminal trial. Jury selection starts today. Trump is accused of falsifying business records to conceal an affair leading up to the 2016 election. He denies all allegations. Last hour, Trump spoke and claimed the case is a political attack on him. The Manhattan District Attorney says the matter is a clear case of fraud. Iran is hailing its military operation against Israel this weekend as a major success. That's despite Israel saying that 99% of the drones and missiles were shot down. NPR's Peter Kenyon reports.
Iranian lawmaker Mojtaba Zanouri was among many Iranian officials lauding the launch against Israel, saying it, quote, humiliated the occupying entity and its supporters. Iran's president, Ebrahim Raisi, also hailed the operation, saying Iran's IRGC, the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, had taught the Zionist entity a lesson. The IRGC chief of staff, Major General Mohammad Bagheri, told state TV the operation was conducted because the Zionist regime had crossed Iran's red line, calling that unacceptable. In statements, the IRGC warned that any response by Israel would provoke an even stronger attack by Iran. Tehran also warned Washington not to use any of its assets in the region to assist an Israeli attack or risk an attack on its personnel and bases. Peter Kenyon, NPR News, Istanbul.
Supporters of abortion rights rallied in Arizona yesterday. A new ban preventing nearly all abortions in the state will take effect soon. Advocates say they're working to get the question on the fall ballot for Arizona voters. Laura Levine was at the rally. She says she has strong reasons to work toward restoring abortion rights in Arizona.
It's all about my daughters. I had an abortion a long time ago after being raped in a parking lot in the snow around Christmas. And I don't want my daughters to experience anything like that.
On Saturday, supporters of abortion rights rallied in Florida. That state's ban takes effect in May. Stocks opened higher this morning as the Commerce Department reported a bigger-than-expected jump in retail sales last month. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average jumped about 330 points in early trading.
U.S. consumers kept their pocketbooks open in March as retail spending rose by 0.7%. Spending at restaurants, grocery stores, and gas stations all outpaced inflation, while online spending jumped 2.7%. Spending was down, however, at car dealers and furniture stores. Oil prices shrugged off the weekend tensions in the Middle East, but gasoline prices continue to climb. AAA reports the average price of regular gas is now $3.63 a gallon. That's about 20 cents higher than a month ago, but slightly lower than this time last year. And today's the deadline for people in most parts of the country to file their tax returns. Thanks to state holidays, taxpayers in Maine and Massachusetts have a couple of extra days. Scott Horsley, NPR News.
This is NPR. Federal agents are searching the cargo ship that crashed into a Baltimore bridge last month, killing six people. This suggests a criminal probe is underway. The crash brought down the bridge and blocked nearly all shipping traffic. The Washington Post is reporting officials are trying to learn if the crew was aware of problems on the ship before the crash occurred. In Augusta, Georgia, Scottie Scheffler has won his second green jacket at the Masters Golf Tournament. He finished the day with a final round of 68. Scheffler is the world's top-ranked golfer and the fourth youngest to have two Masters wins. Steve Futterman reports.
Scottie Scheffler proved to any doubters that he is indeed the best golfer in the world right now. Scheffler began the day with a one-stroke lead and never lost it the entire fourth round. He came through with three consecutive birdies on 8, 9, and 10 and was never seriously challenged the rest of the way, eventually winning by four strokes.
I love winning. I hate losing. I really do. And when you're here in the biggest moments, when I'm sitting there with the lead on Sunday, I really, really want to win badly.
For Scheffler, it's his third win this year. Finishing second was a player to keep an eye on, Ludvig Åberg from Sweden. A year ago, he was competing in college at Texas Tech. For NPR News, I'm Steve Futterman at the Masters in Augusta.
A group of media organizations, including NPR, have released a joint statement. They're calling on President Biden and former President Donald Trump to publicly commit to join general election debates. The statement says there is no substitute for debates on their visions held before the American people. I'm Korva Coleman, NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Bank of America, offering access to resources and digital tools designed to help local to global companies make moves for their businesses. Learn more at bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness.
This is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. It's our Spring Fun Drive, and we are halfway through the drive, and we need your support to finish it off. Call us at 845-482-4141 or go to wjffradio.org. We're 51% of the goal. We need to meet that goal by the end of the week, and the only way we can do that is with listener support. And one of the great things about the Fun Drive is that we get to check in with different folks around our community, including folks from right across the street. We have in studio this morning the students from Sullivan County BOCES innovative design class led by Professor Lawrence Rule.
That's right. Hi, Tim.
How are you?
I'm great. We're great. It's a sunny day. We've been hanging out in the studio and in the sun.
You were actually here a little earlier when the students were on during the 8:30 half hour of Morning Edition, and we did a little innovative design quiz, where each correct answer meant that you had to pay $15.
Don't remind me.
I remind you because I haven't seen that money yet.
Oh, well, it's coming. I spent the last half hour looking for a little extra part-time job to pick up.
We can put you to work, though I can't pay you. 845-482-4141 or wjffradio.org is where you could donate. Now, for folks who may have not been listening earlier, can you explain what the innovative design class is for the students?
Oh, I can. So this is at BOCES. So it's Career in Tech. It's vocational program. And what we do is we teach computer skills as a vocation. So we're doing a lot of 3D design, 3D modeling. We're doing some traditional art. We're doing animation. Kind of anything under the sun that you can do with creative thinking and problem solving.
Yeah, very creative thinkers here and problem solvers. There are two other students who aren't in the studio right now who are doing more kind of interior design as part of that as well.
That's right. They're doing an interior project for WJFF for that communal space there. And I think that's going well.
It is. That we're able to meet with our board president, Kirsten Foster, this morning and show some of the ideas there and help, share with what their plans are. And we're all kind of excited about what they've already developed.
It's so great that they can work with real designers from the community, too. They can get out of the classroom, get away from me for a little bit, and actually work with a real designer. That's great.
Yeah. And so we want to talk to some of the students that are here this morning. And we want to go ahead and introduce yourself and your school.
Rightio, Tim. I am Hi. Jordan. I'm from Liberty. Mr. Rule, I'd like to say I'm not sorry for draining your pockets today. And
wow. So I asked every student outside to come up with something that they're interested and tell the folks on listening what they're interested. Young people are interested in today.
What are you?
The one thing I'm definitely interested in is the world building that we've been doing recently. Not just in that, but I've also been working out with it outside of the thing. I'm thinking on creating a separate project for my own personal life.
And when you talk about world building, and we touched on this a little earlier today, for folks who weren't listening, tell us again about the world building. You're creating your own kind of universe.
We're creating our own universe. I kind of forget the name of it. It hasn't been brought up.
Nemoria.
That's the entire name of the world. We remember one time we had like a little thing. We had to create our own currency for each of our islands. That was fun.
Yeah.
Interesting, though. But fun.
Very cool.
Yeah,
go ahead.
I had a little side project where I made a whole bunch of AI gods, and he watched over it.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
He designed what? How many gods did you design?
If I remember correctly, 42.
Yeah, and
wow.
What's Maurice the god of? Can you tell us real quick?
Maurice is based off of my dad. That's his actual name. He's the god of war and protection, if I remember correctly. I have the document on my phone. I'll pull it up and correct myself later, but that's it for me.
Well, we're talking to the students from Sullivan County BOCES Innovative Design class, and we're meeting them and finding out what their interests are. And
I am Austin Johnson. I'm from Monticello High School, and... Are you talking about, like, in the class?
In the class, yeah. And then,
or in general.
Or in general, whichever.
Oh, for, like, the shows, I'm kind of, like, the most interested and invested in is, like, Power Rangers in general.
Yeah. You know,
because of, like, the action and the suits. How I gotten into, like, the series is because of how, like, interesting the suits are. And I've been heavily inspired by it and about, like, the fun facts of it that I want to, like, make my own superheroes.
You're doing your own thing. Well, that's what we're talking about. We talk about world building or universe building Power Rangers. Someone created that and you're creating your own.
Yeah. I'm like a designer for like some suits. I'm like a concept artist of like my own series called, I don't really want to call it something because I'm not really like working on it right now.
Who's the main character that you like to draw from that series though?
Strike Man. Maybe in the future I'll like develop something called Neo Beast Squadron Spiraton.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. And great. You heard it here first. When we see that up at the theaters, we'll know it started here.
Yeah. It all started from here.
All right, Sylvan, you want to go next?
Hi, I'm Sylvan. I'm from Fallsburg and I really like metal music.
Okay, cool. Why do you like metal music?
There's a whole bunch of different reasons, one being maybe the scream singing in them.
Yeah. And are you in the class, are you into like the programming side of it as well and the modeling?
No, I'm more of like the artistry.
The art, right. That's right. You told me that earlier. What parts of the art are you interested in, like creating, like drawing some of these characters, your own characters?
Own
worlds? Yeah. Anything else in art outside of the class that you work on?
Well, I have these two blank t-shirts in my room that I might make into my own type of thing.
Yeah, see what inspires you, right?
Yeah.
All right. Who's next? Come on over.
I'm Lewis Brown. I'm from Liberty. My favorite things to do is role plays, where you basically make your own story.
Make your own story. Have you created a story recently or something you're working on?
Something I'm working on.
Okay, and you're not going to reveal it right now. It's confidential. It's confidential.
Is there a game that you like to play a lot?
Now, Star Wars.
Star Wars, what is it?
Jedi Survivor.
And again, like Star Wars, a whole world created. And then from that world, there have been all these other worlds created out of it. I think we just got a subscription to Disney Plus because we found it was part of our cable package already. We didn't know.
Oh, that's great.
And then I started seeing there's like all these Star Wars things I didn't even know about. I grew up on the original Star Wars.
Yeah, so maybe we have the next George Lucas in the room here.
You could be. Is that you?
Hi, my name is Frederick from Fallsburg.
Frederick, what part of the class interests you the most, and what are some things you're working on?
Well, nothing much right now.
You have an anime shirt on, it looks like. Is that what that's called, anime?
I just threw it on. It's
Dragon
Ball Z.
Yeah. Is it something Sylvan designed?
No.
Fred, right. Fred has a ton of interest. Tell us a little bit, like, what time frame do you really like to think about?
I really like to talk about like the 1950s and all around before the 90s.
Yeah, every project we do, Fred ties it into like a 50s kind of like that era, right?
My part of the math has more of an 80s aesthetic to
it. Oh, okay.
That's very cool. All right. And who's next?
I'm Giovannathan from Eldred. And something that I look like in innovative design is how we can like spill out our creativity.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm a senior in this class, and last year we had to do a dream house project. And so I decided, people were like building all these log cabins, mansions, so I went differently and I built a caboose.
Well, you really like trains, don't you, Gio?
Yeah, and then at the end of that year, I put together a locomotive that's been in my mind since seventh grade, and I actually computerized it so I can see it. It's a steam diesel, so it runs on steam and diesel, which I actually got the thought of because of a Thomas and Friends line where Diesel 10 was like saying, he always like name calls a steam engine. So I looked at it with a straight face and I'm like, what would he call an engine that ran on steam and diesel? Because you can't insult the steam part without insulting the diesel end.
There you go.
It's very complicated.
So you're a senior. Where will you be taking your learnings from this class to next?
God knows where.
But we wish you luck.
Yeah. That's a really important subject for our seniors right now.
Yeah.
And a lot of them, we hope, end up at SUNY Sullivan, which is a great opportunity, or maybe further abroad. But we're thinking about that a lot right now.
Yeah, well, it's that time of year, right? It's almost, wow. It's
yeah, it's getting close.
How
many,
close.
We counted weeks. How many weeks do we have left, you guys?
Eight.
I would have known. As a senior, I would have known those minutes.
Yeah, I would have known to the minute.
Those days up. All right. Thank you guys for coming over. It's Lawrence Rule and his class from Sullivan County BOCES. They're studying innovative design. Get to hear from some of them. There are a few more here that came in. And
in the woodwork.
You're welcome to come by anytime. You're right across the street. So come on over, and we look forward to hearing more about your worlds and the development of all the different creativity that you guys have over there. Thank you so much.
Thanks for inviting us, Tim.
Yeah, thank you.
Bye.
Have a good night.
Have a good night. Have a great day. Have a good day. Thank you guys so much. And that's one of the great things about having our public radio station right here. We get to talk to so many members of our community, including these really creative types right across the street from the Sullivan County BOCES Innovative Design class. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with more of Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno.
Hi, my name is Caitlin Mihalik, and I teach high school biology in Washington, D.C. Part of the curriculum is to do this task on gene editing. And so I found this recent article at the time that Rob Stein wrote about sickle cell and gene editing, specifically using CRISPR, to help this woman, Victoria Gray. Most of my students are African American, so I thought it was very relevant because most of my students know of sickle cell anemia. They might know of someone who's a carrier, might know someone who has it. So it was a pretty personal and meaningful story to a lot of my students, and it helped pique their interest for the task on looking at gene editing and CRISPR. Representation in journalism matters to the students in my classroom and so many others. Your support ensures we hear from a variety of voices. Please give to the station today.
Support Radio Catskills Spring Fun Drive at WJFFradio.org.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Local, municipal, and county elected officials, represented by the bipartisan group Elected Officials to Protect America, along with a coalition of 183 climate groups, have delivered letters to Governor Kathy Hochul and Assembly Speaker Hastie to underscore the enormous revenue opportunity provided by the Stop Climate Polluter Handouts Act and urged them to include the bill in the state budget. Joining us now is Rich Schrader, Director of New York Government Affairs at NRDC, the National Resources Defense Council. Good morning.
Tim, how are you?
Good.
Thanks for having me here.
Yeah, thanks for being here. Can you tell folks about the Stop Climate Polluter Handouts Act and what that means?
I sure will. It's basically taking away a whole series of historic tax breaks and exemptions from the oil and gas industry. Now, the state has over $1 billion a year worth of state giveaways to the industry. Some of them, though, go to low-income consumers, middle-income consumers at the gas pump in terms of home heating fuel. What this bill does is it strips away all of those exemptions that are worthwhile and look at the exemptions that go to the worst, most polluting, most greenhouse gas-emitting fuels. And it's about $250 to $270 million a year of revenue that the state can take back. Remember, this is not imposing new taxes on the oil and gas industry. This is taking back tax exemptions they've had and that they really don't deserve. And it's things like, you know, bunker fuel, which is really one of the lowest grade, highest polluting fuels used in the transportation sector. And it's used by ships, commercial shipping vessels. There are states like California looking to get rid of and to abolish the use or prohibit the use of bunker fuel. This gets $20 to $30 million a year of tax breaks just for this highly polluting fuel that shouldn't be in there. Diesel fuel, which in manufacturing, which should have been phased out and was beginning to be phased out a decade ago, but the state still provides some of these tax breaks for that, as they do for airline fuel. Now, you know, airline fuel is one of the most polluting fuels that is used by the industrial sector. You know, if it were its own country, the aviation industry globally would be the sixth largest nation responsible for greenhouse gas emissions, not to mention all kinds of other pollutants that get emitted by the communities around the airports. And a small percentage of adults account for the majority of flights taken around the world. In the U.S., 12% of adults account for almost three-quarters of all flights taken. So you subsidize in the aviation industry with these kinds of breaks for their fuel, you're benefiting the highest wage earners who can afford to fly. You know, if airlines decide to increase their tickets, it's primarily going to impact those who are already able to afford it and who are getting subsidized by the companies that they work for. It's also very, very, as I said, highly polluting in terms of the communities around it. So this bill does several things at once. One, it's good for revenue in a tough revenue year. We're getting close to the budget end of it. This is $250+ million back on the table. Not a new tax. It's taking back tax exemptions and tax giveaways that the industry really shouldn't deserve. Two, it gets us closer to the state's climate laws goals, right? By the state landmark climate law of 2019, New York State is supposed to be looking at or mandated to have by 2030 a 40% reduction in greenhouse gas emissions. Well, we're not going to get there if we keep subsidizing and keep providing tax breaks and giveaways to the oil and gas industry who are responsible, not entirely, but mostly responsible for the climate crisis that we're facing. And then third, the oil and gas industry, do they need more tax breaks? This industry doubled its profit in the last 3 years, brags about it, of course, publicly, is responsible for the climate crisis and burning the planet, and shows no intention, with a few exceptions, of trying to move into an alternative type of production system where they can use clean energy. It's just not happening there. New York State shouldn't be providing these tax breaks for that industry.
I wonder if folks are surprised to hear that New York is subsidizing the fossil fuel industry in light of all the climate change that we are encountering, and also in light of the, you know, the climate laws and the progressive nature of those laws that the state is trying to impose.
Well, I do this for a living. I work on environmental and clean air, clean water issues and projects. The bottom line is, in 2019, when we're looking to pass the Climate Act, we started looking at a variety of different tax tools that we could provide for renewables and for things like clean air projects and insulation, offshore wind, solar. But we were finding all of these tax breaks that were provided for oil and gas, you know, especially the gas industry in New York State. So it makes no sense at this point. It might have made sense back in the 50s and 60s when you were essentially seeing a whole suburban infrastructure being developed. In those days, we didn't know about the climate crisis. In fact, people didn't know about it till the 70s and 80s. But now we're facing a crisis that's so real and it's so pending, and we don't have a lot of time to respond to it. New York should not be providing these kind of giveaways to that industry.
Well, NRDC, you know, you advocate for, you know, better environmental solutions. But this bill is supported not only by you, but 180+ organizations and county and local elected officials urging the end of these subsidies. Can you talk a little bit about how the county and local elected officials are impacted by what's going on with the climate change and then how this could help?
Yeah, well, first of all, climate change impacts local governments in a very profound, disproportionate way. Look at things like flooding and how that happens in Long Island and upstate New York, the North Country. We've seen some terrible flooding, of course, throughout the state, including Queens County. But also we've seen flooding in the Hudson Valley now that I think is historic. This oftentimes will not be only cost that are going to be applied to local government, but the local government picks up a disproportionate impact on that. So climate's really meaningful to them. But secondly, I think the other argument, we've talked to a lot of local officials out there, and some of them are this bipartisan support from them. They feel like, well, this is $250 some odd dollars this money could be used for other things. It could be used to the Office of Parks Recreation to provide more parkland. It could be used for housing, which is a huge issue this year, is the central issue, really, in terms of the budget negotiations in New York. It could be used for developing issues to reimburse for public school costs, right, for state-mandated activities. And some of those public school costs, as you know, certainly fall on the shoulders of local government. So there's a lot of reasons there, not just say in Long Island, where local government has picked up a big piece of the tab for all of the flooding and problems on coastline damage that's been done by the various extreme weather incidents, whether it's the hurricanes or flooding.
The letters highlight the potential ways to reappropriate that money very specifically, which includes restoration of some proposed funding cuts to some of these municipal priorities that you mentioned, including the Aid and Incentives for Municipalities Act, the Consolidated Local Street and Highway Improvement Program, and NYSERDA's Clean Energy Communities Program. Have you what kind of response have you had from Governor Hochul and Assembly Speaker Hasty so far, given the fact that the budget is overdue?
Yeah, well, and we're really in the last minutes here, right? We're 2 minutes left on the clock. And, you know, we're seeing who's going to take the last outside shot, right? Pardon the basketball metaphor. But, I mean, we're hitting the playoffs. So the bottom line is, I think that there's a profound interest in all the negotiating parties on this. You know, the Senate put this bill in. And I think that there's interest, of course, in the Assembly. We talked to the members of the both Senate and Assembly, Black, Latino, and Asian caucus. They took it on as one of their priorities. Very strong support there as well. The governor's team that we've been talking to understand profoundly the potential benefits here. If I had to say that, you know, we're going to get the full bill, my guess is maybe not, but I think we get something this session, and we'll be back to try to get the rest of it. I think there's some concerns the prices go up. I think those are fair concerns. But if, again, things like aviation fuel, if we take tax exemptions and tax giveaways back, then if the price of tickets go up, you know, less than 1%, that's an upper middle class consumer, if the commuter's there, and that's being paid for by corporations anyway. So that's not going to have an impact on middle class New Yorkers, particularly. And I also think we should just drop right in the beginning here, no more money to go to gas industries research to look at how to basically increase or expand their infrastructure. That's so far misaligned with the New York State Climate Act, and it's misaligned with federal policy as far as the overall climate crisis investments and policies that the Biden administration is pursuing. It's misaligned with the Paris Agreement. So let's go forward. It's good for the budget. It's good for New York State in terms of its climate goals, and it's good for consumers, and it's good for public health.
Are there some other legislative priorities that you are hopeful that you can get into this year's budget or see enacted in 2024?
Yes, two right off the top that are, you know, particularly involved in the budget stuff. New York Heat, which is a bill that's gotten a lot of ongoing discussion. We're getting again towards the end game here. New York Heat would take away $200 million worth of subsidies to utilities. They get to hook up free any new customer that comes in. It's paid for by all the rest of us who are ratepayers. It's a bad policy, and it's a bad economic dynamic and bad for the climate as we move the state away from gas infrastructure and gas heat. Also, that bill would be important in terms of providing some protections for low-income households and important to allow the Public Service Commission to have, you know, broader authority to direct utilities to invest in clean energy, as the climate law now by statute is demanding. Secondly, we want to make sure that we bring back the full $500 million into the budget for the clean water infrastructure. I've been working on this for well over a decade now and worked on it prior to that. And the Hochul administration has been a leader on that, but they went into this budget with a smaller line item than the $500 million. Both houses support leadership in both houses support restoring it to $500 million and maybe then some. This is a critical and important component. Clean water, popular across the board, across, you know, the party lines up and down the state, and we should be putting this $500 million into wastewater, clean drinking water infrastructure. It's labor, environment, community organizations, local electeds, full support for that.
Right. Rich Schrader, Director of New York Government Affairs for the NRDC. More information about the legislative agenda for them and for 180 plus environmental groups as well, signing these letters about stopping the dependence on stopping the subsidies for fossil fuel industry. More information at NRDC.org. Rich, all eyes on Albany. So thanks so much.
Thanks, Tim. Good to talk to you.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, we'll check in with one of our longtime listeners about how she discovered Radio Catskill during our spring fun drive. This is Radio Catskill.
Imagine one day your NPR station just disappeared. All the news and shows and conversations that you love, gone. Well, we have been thinking about some backup plans. Maybe Corva Coleman could read AI-generated poetry?
Potato clouds drift in a spud-filled sea in this absurd world where I roam free.
Or maybe Steve Inskeep could do some ASMR?
I'm here to guide you through a calming journey into the heart of nature.
Or Scott Simon could read the dictionary.
Oh, here's a good one. Gun Goozler. As somebody who enjoys watching activity on canals. I'm a gun goozler.
Actually, I would listen to Scott Simon reading the dictionary. But you rely on public radio for so much more every day. So please, help us make sure those backup plans stay on the shelf. You can support this station today.
Here's how to donate.
Give now at WJFFradio.org.
Or call 845-482-4141 for our donation during our spring fund drive. We have a $500 challenge issued by Anonymous in Narrowsburg. They issued that to support the work of the folks who run the Narrowsburg Ecumenical Food Pantry, which is located there at St. Xavier Church. They do accept donations at the church for folks and also at Pete's Market in Narrowsburg. So donate now. Help us meet that challenge. We have about $450 to go. So 845-482-4141. Or WJFFradio.org helps us meet our goal during our spring fun drive. Part of the drive, we've been asking folks to tell us how they discovered Radio Catskill, what they value most about Radio Catskill. Sometimes that's an online comment, sometimes it's over the phone, and sometimes it's in person. And it's in person today with one of our longtime listeners and supporters, Judy Balaban. Judy, good morning.
Good morning. How are you, Tim?
I'm good. Thank you so much for coming in. And thanks for your support, of course, over the years. Wanted to ask again for folks, what drew you and how did you discover Radio Catskill?
Well, intelligent radio is something I was in search for. When I moved up here about almost 38 years ago, there was no public radio station. And I think I had been introduced to public radio when I lived in northern Florida, which is like the deep south. I lived there for a couple of years, and I think public radio saved me down there. So when I moved back, I was thrilled when in 1990 we got an NPR station. Radio Catskill started up here.
Yeah, it was such a great community effort to have that be here. And what do you remember about having that time where it was sort of, hey, we should try to do this? It's like, you know, let's put on a show.
Yeah. I mean, it was just all about community, and it was grassroots. At that time, my kids were going to school in Jeffersonville. And, you know, sometimes I would drive by the, you know, the lake and the dam and oh my goodness, what a little studio you had there forever almost.
Yeah.
And when you compare it to where you are now, it's beautiful.
Well, and what I like to say to people is that studio and that location built out of the dedication and love and support of all these members of our community, which allowed us to get to this point. This is the manifestation of all of that in just, you know, over time, someone donated the building. We were able to move from analog to digital, catch up with the times a little bit, and then create another space for folks to come in, like all those students you saw from Sullivan County Bosse's across the street.
That's wonderful. And years ago, there were students from Jeffersonville who would come in and put on their program.
Yeah.
And it, you know, it really isn't the space. It's the people and the energy.
Yeah.
And that existed in Jeffersonville in the small studio that was there.
Yeah. And I think it exists here, too, especially with all the different folks we're able to bring in and have on air, including yourself.
Yeah.
And what is it? I mean, we talked a little bit about those public radio values and public radio. What is it you value about public radio, Radio Catskill?
Well, what I've seen over the past couple of years is that the radio station is responding to the change in the community. And, you know, I miss some of the shows that had been on before, but I love the vibrancy and I understand that change is inevitable. And it's so important to have an organization and a radio station that recognizes that and that embraces that. And that's one of the things that I love about Radio Catskill, as well as how connected you are to the community. Mm-hmm. And if there's something important going on, you are supporting it and informing people. And I'm very grateful for that.
And, you know, we are so pleased to be able to do that. The only way we can do that, though, is through listener support. As you mentioned, you know, 30 years ago, plus 30 years ago, more, when the station started, it was started by a group of people, listeners, public support to do this. We always explain this during these drives because maybe there are people listening that don't know, but we're a nonprofit. We're a public radio station. We exist for the listener, and we ask listeners to support the station with their financial contribution. So we're not dependent on, advertisers like those commercial radio stations are. We're not owned by some big corporation. We're not owned by some tech mogul. Thank goodness.
Absolutely. Yes.
So we rely on listener support. And the way to do that is a few times a year, we come to you and ask for your support, 845-482-4141 or WJFFradio.org.
Yes, please give. Please call. And I understand that there is a...
Yeah, there's a challenge from Anonymous in Narrowsburg.
There's a challenge, and it's really important to give it this time. I mean, I've been a sound supporter for, I don't know, a half a dozen years or so. And before that, I would, you know, listen and give at particular times. But being a sound supporter, it's so easy. And it doesn't hurt, you know. I mean, even though it costs the same amount, it really makes it easy. And the other side of having a radio station that, you know, makes sure we know what's going on in the community is that the community must support it as much as it can. And what I love about listening to the fundraisers is it's very clear that there's an understanding that some people can't afford to give, and that sometimes those of us who can, we go through stages where we can't afford, and that's okay. So it's up to us. We have a responsibility to each other and to the station, if we listen to it, to make sure we do what we can. So I encourage you to do that.
Yeah, I like what you said. It's a responsibility to each other. And that's what it is. It really is to make sure that it's there for everyone. You turn it on, it's always there. And we want it to always be there. 845-482-4141 or WJFFradio.org. Thanks for mentioning being a sound supporter. Thanks for being a sound supporter. It's easy to set up, as Judy said. It doesn't hurt. It's just, it's there and you know you're doing it. And it's great to know that that's happening in the background. You just set it and forget it. If you're already a sound supporter, think about maybe increasing it by a couple dollars a month, $5 a month or more, or whatever you could do. Or make a one-time donation, 845-482-4141 or WJFFradio.org. Judy, I want to thank you so much for coming in today and for your support and your longtime commitment to the station. Anything else you want to add?
Just thank you all for all that you're doing for us.
Thank you. Thank you for coming by. Give a call and Judy might be here and pick up the phone and say hi.
Maybe.
845-482-4141. It's our spring fun drive here at Radio Catskill. We'll take a quick break and we'll have more of Radio Chatskill right after this.
Radio Catskill supporters include the Sterling Business and Technology Park, located at Exit 17 on Interstate 84 in Northeast Pennsylvania, offering opportunities to locate or expand businesses on property zoned for manufacturing and other uses. More information at sterlingbusinesspark.com. And listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
In this country, more than 2 local newspapers are closing down each week. This leaves most counties with little or no access to local news and information, and even more are at risk of losing their last local news source. As news deserts grow, public radio is a lifeline for staying informed. Keep that service strong with a donation to this station.
Support the news and information you rely on. Donate now at WJFFradio.org.
Or you can call us at 845-482-4141. It's our spring fund drive. And checking the numbers, we are at $27,904, just short of $28,000, which means we're 51% of the goal. That's great. We're over halfway there. The goal is $55,000. We need to meet that by Saturday. So that's 5 days remaining. Is that right? 845-482-4141. Or you can go to WJFFradio.org and you can be a part of the community that makes this station possible. Make that tax-deductible donation today. This is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Scientists are monitoring the spread of bird flu in dairy cattle and other mammals to see how the virus is changing. So far, there are no alarming signs that it poses a new risk to humans. How widespread is this virus in dairy cattle and what could it mean? I spoke to Dr. Jody Galadic, chief epidemiologist for Garnet Health. We should note Garnet Health is a financial supporter of WJFF.
So what I can tell you is that we've had, outbreaks and things like that with, it's called highly pathogenic avian influenza. And the reason they name it that is because it is highly pathogenic to birds, just both wild and domesticated, but we mostly see it in wild birds. And we do see periods of time where while we see the disease in wild birds, they can pass it on to domesticated animals. Recently, what they've been seeing is there was a case in Texas where it was in dairy cows. And they did have dairy cows that did test positive for the avian influenza. Then some of these cows also went to Michigan, and they did find some of the cows from Michigan were also sick. I think this is typically you don't see it in a lot of other animals, but you can. And so there was one that there's a, you know, they want to make sure people are aware that if they work with these domesticated animals or if they are around birds or wild birds that they're aware, because we do see cases in livestock and wild animals throughout the United States. They did recently put a notice out yesterday that there was one case of a worker that worked with these cows that did test positive for avian influenza. He had conjunctivitis. He received treatment and he was recovering. So that's been the first case that has been transmitted to humans since 2022, when that was again seen in livestock to a person. But it's not common. The risk to the general public is very, very low.
The FDA had said that the commercial supply of pasteurized milk, it remains safe, but that it does not currently have any concerns. Is that because the pasteurization process will kill influenza?
Yes, and so that's the reason why. Also, typically the FDA will also, if the animal is sick, they won't use that milk for human consumption.
Raw milk has become increasingly more popular in the United States. Is that a concern, though, that it could possibly be contracted through consuming raw milk or other dairy?
There is concern for that. That's why it's recommended to avoid unpasteurized milk in dairy, not just for avian influenza. There are other diseases that we see in raw milk. So just in general, it's recommended that if you're going to consume those dairy products, to consume pasteurized.
So far, these cases have been in dairy cows and not those used for meat. Is there any concern about meat in the meat supply?
Not at this time. There, you know, it is avian influenza, so there is concern for, you know, chicken and other animals. You can see it in the wild also. So one thing they recommend is that don't handle sick or, you know, dead animal carcasses, especially birds and things like that, without proper equipment. So if you do, and, you know, if you do work in a poultry plant, you know, you have to keep in mind, like, watching the animals, seeing any sick animals, making sure that you're going, you know, to whoever your manager is, letting them know that that's occurring.
I guess this is probably a good time to remind folks at the consumer level that, you know, if you're handling raw meat, there are simple steps that you should always follow to avoid getting any kind of contamination or sickness.
Yes. In general, when you're handling raw meat, especially raw chicken, you want to make sure that you're washing your hands, you know, before and after handling the meat, wiping down the areas that you are and cleaning the areas that you are preparing the raw meat, making sure that you cook it to the appropriate temperature. The biggest thing is you want to make sure that you're not cross-contaminating, also that, you know, you cut up chicken and then you cut up, you know, something that you're not going to cook in the same area without cleaning the area properly and washing your hands properly.
What about eggs? Any concerns with eggs?
No, not at this point in time. And I think even in the poultry process, there's not, again, we had outbreaks in the past with avian influenza, which again, when that happens, the poultry farmers are aware. A lot of times it will cause a bottleneck because they'll have to unfortunately destroy the chickens, and so they don't, and they won't sell those products. And so sometimes we will see a decrease because they just don't have as many hens laying and things like that. But as of right now, it looks like this is just in dairy cows.
And we were talking about these dairy cows mainly in Texas, but there has been some detection of bird flu in New York City. This week, some birds found in New York City parks and green spaces were seen to have the disease. Again, what should folks know about that, something that's happening a little more close to home?
Yeah, and that, and it's, and again, avian influenza typically happens in wild birds. And what happens is wild birds can pass it to domesticated animals or animals used for the food chain, you know, because it can be in their feces, it can be in their saliva. So there can be transmission from wild birds. So in general, you know, don't handle, sick birds, don't handle the carcasses without proper PPE or proper protective equipment is typically an N95 mask, goggles, and gloves. So again, if you don't need to touch the carcass, I would avoid touching the carcass or handling a sick animal.
And I think it's also important to note if someone does come across a sick bird or sick animal, they should reach out to the Department of Environmental Conservation to report that. It's important also to emphasize that there have only been two humans infected with bird flu in the United States since 2022, including the one we were talking about in Texas. So it is very rare, but people should just maintain some sense of caution that they always would sort of maintain.
Right, and just situational awareness of what's going on. And so if you see something that you think is suspicious, obviously reach out to the proper authorities to discuss it.
Thank you so much for joining us today and for your help with understanding it, Dr. Jody Galadik, the epidemiologist for Garnet Health.
Thank you so much for having me.
We'll take a quick break and we'll be back with more. This is Radio Chatskill.
I'm Lauren Migaki. I'm a coordinating producer for NPR. A coordinating producer is someone who goes in the fields wherever there's a big news event happening and acts as event planner and scheduler and script proofreader. Often it just means you're the problem solver on the ground. So anything that the reporters need to do their job, you're kind of there to help with. You know, the beauty of it is that you get to support people who are telling people stories that you can't get if you're not on the ground. Making sure that they have power strips and showers, things like that, it feels like you're part of this bigger team effort to help tell the story. I think it's so important to have eyes and ears on something as small as a school board vote to as large as a global conflict. There's a lot that goes into reporting a story that doesn't always get seen, but is crucial to doing the story, and we could not do that without listener donations.
Keep public radio in the Catskills in Northeast Pennsylvania. Give now at WJFFradio.org.
Be a part of our team. Call us at 845-482-4141 or donate at WJFFradio.org during our spring fund drive. We've got a $500 challenge from Anonymous in Narrowsburg, and we have about $450 to go. So help us get that down, whittle that down a little bit. What part can you do? 845-482-4141 or WJFFradio.org. A member of our team is somebody that we hear from every Monday. It is James B. Huntington. It's Work Shift Live, local economic news and perspective. Good morning, James B.
Good morning, Tim. Good morning, listeners.
And we've got a couple of things to get to. Let's talk about some of the local news in the economy. You've got some info and data on the latest on unemployment in our area.
Yes, the February data is in. Sullivan County had 4.5% unemployment. Orange, 4.2%. Ulster County, 4.3%. Wayne County, 5.0%. And Pike County, 5.2%. These are up between 0.2 and 0.4 for each month. So it was a lousy month. There should not be much of a difference between January and February. The national unemployment rate, unadjusted, was 4.2%, lower than anything except Orange, and that only went up 0.1%. So it's creeping up. It's still doing reasonably well, but this is a trend in the wrong direction, so let's hope it doesn't continue.
Exactly. Let's talk about some of the trends with consumer prices. What did we learn about consumer prices last week?
Yes, consumer prices, the consumer price index, tracked by the federal, tracked by the Bureau of Labor Statistics, went up 3.5% in March from a year earlier. That's more of an increase than it was supposed to be, a little bit disappointing, stronger than expected. And Wall Street did not like it. It went down a few hundred on this. So it's still not terrible, this inflation thing, but we don't want to see it creeping up when there's a lot of effort going into getting it to go down.
Yeah, I mean, the inflation reports are, I guess, a little disappointing. And how are Americans feeling? I mean, some folks are saying they still feel like it's tough, and other folks are saying maybe not so much. It's not so bad. I mean, it seems like Wall Street and the sort of sentiment with consumers are like sort of out of balance.
Well, the month over month changes are down from a year or two ago, but they're still high. Of course, when prices went up, when inflation was 6 and 7% and more, the prices did not go down when the inflation rate slowed down. So they're still seeing high things. They still are creeping up in a lot of places. Food and fuel seem to be causing some problems. So it's understandable that people would be discouraged. So we're going to need it to level off if we want to make people happier, although I don't see that happening soon at all.
How much inflation has there been at the wholesale level?
Yes, that report came in also a couple days later. So that went up 0.2% for the month, everything except food and energy, that is. So that's in line with estimates, although it's... And it is lower than the 0.3% from last month. It's on a 12-month basis, it's up 2.4%. It was 2% even last time. So that's unfortunate, but it's noteworthy that wholesale inflation is running lower than retail inflation. So often wholesale inflation means that there is room for cutting prices and competitive things. So we may see inflation going down or being lower than we're at now in a month or two because of these lower wholesale prices or only slightly higher wholesale prices.
All right. Let's talk about the numbers. How was the stock market doing, oil prices, and all the other prices? How did things change?
Okay, gold. Very early this morning turned in $2,346 an ounce. That's plus 11. Silver, 28.18, up 43 cents. The ratio is now down to 83 to 1. Silver's now doing better than gold. It has a ways to catch up. 83 times, but it seems to be improving. The Dow Jones Industrial Average, 37,983, down 921. It was a punk week for the Dow, and the second in a row, because it's now down 1,800 for 2 weeks. NASDAQ did better, 16,175, down only 74. Oil, the West Texas Intermediate, 84.53, very early, down $1.48, down for once lately, although I saw it's in the 85s now, or it was an hour or so ago. Bitcoin, 66,374, that's down 4,800 and some. Big correction, but of course we know that Bitcoin is more volatile, so very low or very high percentage changes, rather, are going to be more common. British pound, 1.2488, down about a penny and a quarter. The euro, 1.0662, down about a 1.65 cents. Both of those liked U.S. interest rates, seeming like they're not going to go down for a while. And the Japanese 100 yen coin at 65 cents dropped a penny, so that got in on the act, too. Overall, except for oil and gold, this was a week to forget.
Okay. Always good to have your economic perspective. James B. Huntington, local author and economist, bringing us Work Shift Live every Monday with an eye on what's going on in the economy. We got our own economic concerns over here with our spring fund drive, so we're going to get back to it. Okay, James?
Yeah, very good. Thank you, Tim. Thank you, listeners.
All right, thank you. We'll talk to you next Monday. And we are trying to get a little bit more going on our fund drive here. We're at 51% of our goal. Great place to be, but we got to make up the rest of it by the end of the week. 845-482-4141 or WJFFradio.org. Call us now. We have a challenge there from some friends in Narrowsburg that are doing it in support of the Narrowsburg Ecumenical Food Pantry. They provide food for families in need that live within a 10-mile radius of the pantry. Pantry is located there in Narrowsburg at the St. Francis Xavier Catholic Church on Bridge Street. They accept food donations that can be dropped off at the pantry or at Pete's Market in Narrowsburg. Again, anonymous, honoring them and issuing a challenge to you for Radio Catskill. It's a $500 challenge. We only heard from a few folks, so we've got $450 to go on that. So let us know what part of that you can do, 845-482-4141 or WJFFradio.org. Let's make a dent in it, because we need to make a dent in the overall goal here. Had a great weekend. Just need to keep that momentum going for the next 5 days. We could end it sooner if we hear from you. 845-482-4141 or WJFFradio.org. We can only exist with the generosity of our listeners, listeners like you. A gift to the fund drive supports the day-to-day operations, as well as all these programs that we're able to bring you, including this one, including the next one, which is On Point, coming up next from WBUR Boston. We send a portion of those funds up to Boston so we can bring you this show at 11 every day. And then Democracy Now! At noon, of course, we send some money down to Amy Goodman's way as well. You support all of that great programming. You also support our local music DJs. A lot of them you heard this weekend. Also our community shows like Trailer Talk, which is on tonight at 7:30. And also Catskill Character, Farm and Country, all of the shows. And we need your support to continue to bring those to you. 845-482-4141 or WJFFradio.org. Your donation today helps us keep public radio going for everyone. As Judy Balaban said a little earlier, it's up to all of us to continue to bring it to everyone. We all have a responsibility. So 845-482-4141 or WJFFradio.org. We are looking for your support in any one of those ways. Even come on by. It's a beautiful day outside. If you happen to be driving around and you want to stop in, we'll give you a little tour. There might be a little snack as well. And you might get to see Jason Dole, who just popped in. Hello.
You might not. I'm going to leave.
You are? Why?
It's a beautiful day.
I know.
You just said it's so beautiful outside.
It's so nice.
Yeah, no, I'll be here. Come on by. 845-482-4141. You can also call on the phone like that. 845-482-4141.
It's like one of those days when you were in school and it was so nice outside and you just wanted to like go out and skip.
Can't
really skip, though. We got this fun drive.
You get a lot of those in radio.
Call us at 845-422-4141 or WJFFradio.org. We had a great weekend. Well, we had to postpone that Tiny Porch concert because of the not-so-great beautiful weather on Saturday.
But we still had musicians come inside.
We were able to bring people in.
And it was fantastic. Yeah, it was really cool.
And we're going to do the Tiny Porch concert this coming Saturday out on the porch from 10 to 4, and we'll get some of those musicians out there to see them live and hear them live. But great to hear all of the great musicians and supporting the local arts and culture in our area with your donation to our station. We're that platform that's able to bring you those voices and that music, and we can only do it with your support.
That's right. So please give us your support right now, whatever way that you can, however much you've got to give. And if you have not given yet and you've got something to give, please do give now. Go to WJFFradio.org, donate online, WJFFradio.org, or call us right here, 845-482-4141. There are still some folks that might have an envelope with our address on it that they can put the funds in and put that in the mail. If you've been thinking about that, or now's the time you could just straight up call us and cut out the middleman.
Well, drive it over. Come on and say hi. We also have some tickets left for some concerts at Bethel Woods and some events at Bethel Woods, including the Catskill Cuisine event in May. We've got two tickets for that. We've got two tickets for the Amy Winehouse celebration. We've got two tickets to Roger Daltrey reserve tickets. How do you get those? A gift of $100 or more will get you those tickets as a thank you for your donation. That also puts it toward the challenge we have to help us get to the end of the drive. 845-482-4141. We'll tell you about those. We have some other stuff too, some family things, Kids Bop, and then also Forestburg Playhouse. We got some tickets to some shows this summer at the Forestburg Playhouse.
And those kids, and there's a family show at Forestburg Playhouse, but those are four ticket packs.
Exactly. So 845-482-4141. WJFF Jeffersonville, W233AH Monticello. Streaming live at WJFFradio.org. It's 11.